The headlines this hour. The U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza continues for the 149th day, with the death toll exceeding 30,300, mostly women and children. Several Israeli forces are killed and their military equipment destroyed as Palestinian fighters carry out more retaliatory operations across Gaza. And a top Hamas official says talks are taking place in the Egyptian capital Cairo with the hope of finalizing a ceasefire deal in Gaza. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
The ongoing Israeli genocidal campaign in the Gaza Strip keeps taking a heavy toll on civilians, with scores killed in the regime's attacks. For the second time in less than 48 hours, Israeli troops opened fire on Palestinians waiting for aid in Gaza City, killing one and injuring dozens. At least 11 civilians were also killed in an Israeli airstrike that targeted a tent for displaced people in Rafah. Dozens of civilians were killed in Israeli strikes on Khan Yunis and Deir al-Bala in southern and central Gaza. Israeli forces committed 10 massacres during the past day. The death toll from Israel's onslaught on Gaza since early October has surpassed 30,300, most of them women and children. More than 70,000 others have been injured, while thousands more remain unaccounted for. Our correspondent Muti Abu Musaba says fresh Israeli attacks on Gaza have left behind more civilian casualties.
These days, the Palestinian people are witnessing another wave of the Israeli massacres hitting all areas of Gaza Strip. And the last night, the Palestinian people in Rafah City actually lived a horrifying night as the Israeli warplanes continued targeting more residential buildings. At least 14 Palestinian civilians, most of them women and children, were slaughtered while they were inside a house. When the Israeli warplanes destroyed that house over their heads. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces committed another massacre in Jabalia refugee camp by killing at least 10 Palestinian civilians. In As-Saftawi neighborhood located in the northern part of Gaza City also, the Israeli warplanes destroyed another house over the heads of the Palestinian residents there, killing at least 6 Palestinian civilians. And now, these moments, as we are speaking right now, the Israeli occupation forces are circumventing Hamad neighborhood located in the northern part of Khan Yunis city, knowing that the Israeli occupation forces committed an appalling massacre yesterday by attacking the school taking shelter there by the Palestinian evacuees.
Palestinian fighters are putting up stiff resistance to Israeli forces in Gaza as fighting on the ground rages on. The military wing of Hamas resistance movement said that its fighters blew up a booby-trapped house that resulted in death or injury of at least 7 regime soldiers in Khan Yunis. The Al-Qassam Brigade said the group was also able to seize an Israeli Skylark drone in Gaza City. Israel confirmed the deaths of 3 soldiers in the Gaza Strip. It also said 14 others were injured, 6 of them seriously. The regime says 245 of its troops have been killed since it launched a ground invasion of Gaza in late October. Palestinian groups, however, say that the regime is intentionally hiding the real number of casualties among its forces to avoid public anger. The Islamic Jihad resistance movement has warned the Israeli Prime Minister over the regime's post-war scheme. The spokesman for the military wing of the Islamic Jihad said the future of the Gaza Strip will only be determined by the resistance movements, not Israel. Abu Hamza said the end of the war in Gaza will be the prelude to the complete destruction of the Israeli regime. He reiterated the group's readiness to continue the fight with Israel as long as it takes. Comments come as Israel plans to control and occupy Gaza after a possible truce there. Abu Hamza also called on Arabs and Muslims to provide Palestine with weapons. He urged all Palestinians to mobilize against Israel on the first day of the holy month or fasting month of Ramadan. A top Hamas official says the movement has received an invitation to visit Cairo for Gaza ceasefire talks that resume later on Sunday. Osama Hamdan says Hamas is keen to achieve a result that satisfies Palestinians. Hamdan says, however, that Israel does not want a ceasefire. He says the regime is killing Palestinians and the U.S. is giving it time to continue the crimes. Egyptian sources say Palestinian and Israeli negotiators have already agreed on the duration of the ceasefire and a prisoner swap. Draft proposals indicate 400 Palestinian prisoners will be released in exchange for 40 Israeli captives. The proposals also include the daily delivery of 500 trucks of humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip,
with both sides halting their military operations. However, the Israeli military withdrawal from the coastal strip remains a bone of contention. Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian teen in a violent raid near the Jalazun refugee camp, north of the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. According to Palestinian media, 13-year-old Mohammed Khalid Zaid died as a result of serious wounds that he sustained after being hit with the Bashim forces' live fire. Local sources said Israeli forces left the teen bleeding for about an hour before handing him over to Palestinian ambulance services. Another Palestinian teenager was also injured during the raid. Israel has intensified its incursions across the West Bank since launching a genocidal war on the Gaza Strip on October 7. Attacks by Israeli forces and settlers have left more than 400 Palestinians dead in the occupied territories since then. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, earlier joined us with more details about the latest Israeli deadly raid in the occupied West Bank.
This teen was shot dead by the Israeli soldiers last night near Al-Jalazun refugee camp. We have to mention that there's the illegal settlement of Beit Il. It's adjacent to the refugee camp of Al-Jalazun. And the Israelis claim that this Palestinian child, 13-year-old Mohammed Zaid, tried to throw Molotov cocktails at the nearby Israeli settlement. And then the Israelis opened fire at him, shot him, and left him bleeding. Then the Israelis were reporting that a Palestinian was shot and killed under the bridge of Al-Jalazun refugee camp. There are walls separating the illegal settlement of Beit Il. There are towers surrounding the settlement of Beit Il with Israeli soldiers there. So it's according to the family, it's impossible for this child to go to this nearby area and to try to throw Molotov cocktails. But as usual, the Israelis try to show that it's another act by Palestinians to carry out any form of aggression against the Israelis, and that's why they opened fire. He was only 13 years old. He was the only child of his family, and he was shot and killed. This means the number of Palestinians who were killed by the Israeli forces since the 7th of October rises to 419. Palestinians were shot and killed by the Israeli forces, and a number were killed by the settlers.
For several weeks, Israel has been the scene of protests against the policies of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. We discussed this with our guests in our news review program. Let's see what they had to say.
And now it's time for the news review section, where we delve deeper into the day's one of the day's top stories. So stay with us. Now, thousands of Israeli protesters have rallied in Tel Aviv demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Several protesters were detained after clashing with the regime's forces, who used tear gas to disperse the demonstrators.
I'm against the government which behaves like the worst fascist that ever be. They studied everything that Germany did to us. We are doing now to the Palestinians.
Protesters also called for holding snap elections. They demanded the release of Israeli captives held by Palestinian resistance groups. Also, thousands of Israelis led by the families of the captives marched to occupied Al-Quds, demanding a truce deal. Israel's premier has been under fire for putting his political interests in Gaza before the lives of the captives. Netanyahu is embroiled in a series of scandals. His charges, amongst others, include fraud and breach of trust. This has prompted protesters to take to the streets almost every weekend to call for his immediate resignation. Now, to talk more on this, we are joined by Mr. Saeed Khan, Professor of Near East and Global Studies from Wayne State University from Detroit, Michigan, and also Mr. Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist from Houston, Texas. Gentlemen, welcome to the news review section. Now, beginning with you, Mr. Khan, we've seen these anti-Netanyahu demos in Tel Aviv on a weekly basis. They want his resignation and are also demanding a ceasefire now, thus the release of the Israeli captives held by Palestinian resistance groups. So why is Netanyahu not listening to his own people? Many are blasting him for, they say, prioritizing his political interests in Gaza over the lives of the captives. Now, your thoughts on that, do you think he is prolonging this onslaught because he knows he will be convicted of genocide when all this ends?
Well, I think even before a charge of genocide, there is the issue about him being convicted on several other charges that predated October the 7th, including fraud and corruption. So Netanyahu's political instincts are very much a matter of survival. And unfortunately, as we see even in the United States with some politicians, this seems to then be the main priority to even prolong something as egregious as what is going on here. I know that is a very, very cynical view to go ahead and have, but these are very extraordinary circumstances, and one has to go ahead and take a look at that in the calculus. The second thing, though, of course, is the fact that he is enabled to remain in power, not just by his own political party, but also by several Western governments. I mean, including, of course, unfortunately, the United States. The images that you're showing of the streets of Tel Aviv and the demonstrations are images that are not present within the American coverage, at least in mainstream media, and certainly, I would argue, even more broadly in Western media. If there was a sense of seeing how unpopular he is even within his own country, that a so-called democracy has then people taking to the streets with the frequency that they are, perhaps then there would be some kind of recognition that Netanyahu, not only acting in an anti-democratic way, but acting in a way that is clearly just for his own interests and self-interest, would then evoke a different kind of reaction. But this preservation of Netanyahu and the conduct that he is perpetrating seems to be, one would argue, conspiratorial.
That's right, Mr. Naqvi, like Mr. Khan said, it seems that even Netanyahu's ally Washington is frustrated of his actions on Gaza, as the backlash has been so severe that it has also further tarnished the U.S. image, especially being the so-called advocates of human rights. Now, it's also having effects on the upcoming elections as well. As we've seen, people are now calling Biden Joe, Genocide Joe. Analysts are saying that Washington has realized this and just recently, quote, in a PR stunt, airdropped some aid to Gaza to be able to say that they weren't complicit in this genocide.
America's seriousness in calling for a ceasefire or to persuade the Zionist regime for a ceasefire seems more like a marketing campaign by the Biden government, because clearly the people of the U.S., the masses who have come out to protest, have made it clear that they want a permanent ceasefire in occupied Palestine. But having said that, if the U.S. was serious in pressurizing the Zionist regime, because we all know how dependent the Zionist regime is financially to the U.S., how dependent they are militarily and diplomatically throughout the world, we know that the U.S. regime is one of the only few countries that still supported the Zionist regime in the United Nations Security Council. And now recently they signed off $12 billion. Congress signed off $12 billion in military aid to the Zionist regime not too long ago. The main perpetrator in the U.S. government, apart from Biden, genocide Biden, is the Secretary of State Blinken, who seems to be one of the perpetrators of the support that the Zionist regime receives from the American government. It almost seems like a facade in which we see the likes of Blinken and other members of the Biden government who claim to want peace, who claim to want the end of the genocide in Gaza, but their actions say otherwise. And that goes on to show the vulnerability of the United States government. That goes on to show the vulnerability of the Zionist regime and its leaders, Netanyahu and Ben-Gavir, right now. Because to win this election, the Democrats and Republicans both need to take a stance on Israel. The Democrats have a softer stance, but their support is apparent. And so the hypocrisy that we see in the bipartisan political party system here in the US is obvious. No matter who you are, a Democrat or a Republican, they're both one when it comes to their support for the Zionist regime. And that is because of lobby groups like AIPAC, who bear so much influence on these politicians who hold office, that to them, the American people, the US citizens of the US, aren't as important as their relations with Netanyahu and the Zionist regime. It is because lobby groups like AIPAC fund them and support them.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Mr. Saeed Khan, Professor of Near East and Global Studies from Wayne State University, Detroit, Michigan, and also Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist from Houston, Texas. Gentlemen, thank you for your time. And with that, we come to the end of this news review section. Thank you for staying tuned.
Thousands of Austrians have taken to the streets of the capital, Vienna, to protest against the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Waving Palestinian flags, the demonstrators marched to the House of the European Union and the Parliament building. They chanted slogans including Free Palestine and Hands Off Rafah. Protesters called for an immediate ceasefire and the delivery of humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of life.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 3rd, 2024. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is a program which is broadcast on Sundays. This is a program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So, please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcasts. And if you have any message for our listeners listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Especial is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is another edition of Listeners Special, and here we've received reception reports from you, dear listeners. This time, Frank Thies from the Netherlands, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us reception report. Ayush Kumar Das from India has sent us reception report. And from India again, we've received reception report from Musharraf Hussain, our old and regular listener. And let's see who has sent us email from India. Ayush Kumar Das has sent us a piece of email. Muhammad Briel from Malaysia has sent us a piece of email. Muhammad Briel is one of our old and regular listener. And Alejandra from Argentina has sent us an email. So before we read your emails during the course of our program, I have to say that these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. And all of you who have sent in reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL from us. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. This is another edition of Listeners Special, and guess what? In this edition of Listeners Special, we are going to talk about Behbahan's daffodils. As you might know, Behbahan in the southwest Khuzestan province in Iran stands as one of Iran's most renowned hubs for daffodils. These beautiful flowers hold not only aesthetic value but also medicinal and industrial significance. The harvest season in Behbahan typically commences in mid-December and continues until late February and March. In essence, the daffodil harvest season in Behbahan transcends mere agricultural activity. It is a fusion of nature, culture, and industry, inviting tourists and travelers to immerse themselves in the splendor of this floral abundance while experiencing the rich tapestry of the region's heritage and traditions. The particular strain of daffodils cultivated in Behbahan is also known as Nargis. Historical texts even mention the expanse of Behbahan's daffodil gardens to have spanned between 700 to 800 hectares in centuries past. Yes, that is the story of Behbahan's daffodil. So let's see what Ayush Kumar Das from India says. Ayush Kumar Das from India has sent us a piece of email and says, "Dear sir or madam, I want to say that the reception report is enclosed to this email. Please kindly find and issue a QSL card or EQSL to verify them. Also send me some new programs guide and some beautiful postcards. I hope you will send me a letter soon as possible with a new QSL and picture postcard." Salam Ayush Kumar Das from India, and thank you very much for writing to us at IRIB English Radio. We hope you're fine. Actually, we received your reception report. As you might know, these reception reports enable us to provide a better service for our listeners around the world. So please accept our appreciations to you for your care and your support. And please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. Please write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. We wish you all the best. Just heard a piece of a very beautiful traditional music from Iran, from southern Iran, from Khuzestan, and the instrument that was being played was what in Farsi we say Neyambun. Well, I was saying the attraction of these flowers, I mean the daffodils, lies not just in their beauty and diversity, but also in the special customs and arrangements surrounding them. These aspects have turned into a natural tourism attraction for the region, I mean Behbahan, and the broader province of Khuzestan, capable of drawing in diverse tourists from various parts of Iran and the world. Local customs related to the cultivation and celebration of the daffodils during the harvest season have become an integral part of the region's cultural identity. Tourists are treated to an immersive experience, witnessing the delicate process of harvesting these blooms, understanding their significance in traditional medicine, and partaking in cultural festivities unique to the area. Authorities and locals alike are keen on preserving this natural heritage, ensuring sustainable practices in daffodil cultivation and tourism management. According to available data, efforts are underway to enhance facilities for visitors, for tourists, including guided tours, accommodations, and cultural events centered around this seasonal marvel. Good for tourists. So, let's go to an email from Malaysia from Muhammad Briel, who is one of our old and regular listeners. Muhammad says, thank you for your email. I still prefer to receive a paper QSL card. Inshallah, you will continue to post paper QSLs, although I do understand the cost factor and delivery problems should IRIB decide otherwise. EQSLs are okay. Thank you for your efforts. Kind regards from Malaysia. A warm salam and greeting to you from Tehran, the capital of Iran, Muhammad Riel from Malaysia. Muhammad, many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. Of course, an EQSL or electronic QSL will be sent to you very soon as confirmation to your kind email. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. As we always say, your views about our broadcast are always welcomed, kindly welcomed. Welcome back. As you just heard, the nature of the music from southern Iran has a joyful and very happy nature, and I like it. So, I was saying, daffodils hold profound symbolism in Iranian culture and literature, often emblematic of the beloved's eye. The poetry in Farsi frequently likens the beloved to the daffodil, drawing parallels with its leafless green stem, a symbol of humility and dignity. characterized by its hollow, straw-like and curved structure. Lying at the head of the Persian Gulf and bordering Iraq on the west side, Khuzestan was settled about 6000 BC by a people with affinities to the Sumerians who came from the Zagros Mountains region. Urban centers appeared there with the first cities in Mesopotamia in the 4th millennium. Khuzestan, according to Encyclopedia Britannica, came to constitute the heart of the Elamite kingdom, with Susa as its capital. Alexander the Great took Susa shortly after the Battle of Guagmila in 331. The region was passed firmly into Parthian control between 148 and 113 BC and then under Sasanian rule about 226 CE. Moreover, it was a frontier zone between the Roman Byzantine and the Parthian Sasanian empires and finally was taken by the Arabs in about 642. The Khuzestan region was part of the Safavid and Qajar dynasties that successively ruled Iran. In the 20th century, Khuzestan's prosperity revived with the development of oil fields, the building of the Trans-Iranian Railway, and the expansion of ports at Abadan and Khorramshahr. And that was the story of the daffodils in Behbahan, which is located in Khuzestan province in southern Iran. So let's see what Alejandro from Argentina says. In his email, actually, Alejandro says, "Hi, I am glad that I could catch your signals here in Buenos Aires, Argentina, a few days ago. I attached an audio clip sample. The reception was good with a lot of noise, but overall the reception was good. Thank you for your precious efforts. Waiting for a verification from your side. God bless you all. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Alejandro from Argentina. Appreciations to you for this email, and it's good to hear that the signals of IRIB English Radio can be heard in Buenos Aires, Argentina, which is very far from Iran. Thank you very much for sending this email to your favorite radio, IRIB English Radio. God bless you too. An electronic QSL will be sent to you as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Had a very great time together, but we have to say goodbye because we have come to the end of this edition of Listeners Special. But before saying goodbye to you, I just wanted to send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails from around the world, including Frank Tis from the Netherlands, Ayush Kumar Das from India, Musharraf Hussain from India, Mohammad Briel from Malaysia, and Alejandro from Argentina. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us at IRIB English Radio and Listeners Special Program. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, is there any horror that the Palestinians in Gaza have not gone through since October? These people have been starved, denied water, electricity, gas, and at times communications. They've been bombed by planes, tanks, drones, snipers, and they have been kidnapped, raped, tortured, and imprisoned. And on Thursday, even they were bombed while in line trying to get flour for their starving families in what is being called the Flour Massacre. It's just another massacre in a long line of so many others in Gaza. All of this while there's still talk of a ceasefire, but no action of really implementing one. How many more Palestinians must be killed before the powers that be say enough? I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of Montreal, author and political activist Yves Engler. And out of Tehran, Ali Salam, editor-in-chief Basira Press.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you both for being with us. I'll start this off in Montreal. And Yves, on Thursday, the Flour Massacre took place where at least 112 more Palestinians were killed and over 750 injured. Officials of the Israeli regime have been very smug with their explanations and basically say the hungry masses, Palestinians, brought this on themselves due to attacking the humanitarian trucks. I mean, your thoughts on all of this and seeing that scene, what went through your mind?
They keep doing things that are even worse than one would imagine they could do. The bar just keeps going lower and lower. The Israeli propaganda response, the denying it, and then some of their spokespeople saying, oh yeah, we did kill some people, but they deserved it because they threatened us. And then seeing all these apologists for Israel's genocide on social media just denying it all happened. It's hard to wrap one's head around. There's complicity shared around all of the self-described democracies and human rights countries of the West are are enabling this, you know, starving people trying to get some food being mowed down by a occupying power that has been put them under siege for two decades, that, you know, drove them from their homes 75 years ago and has been regularly terrorizing Palestinians of Gaza.
Well, Ali, do you think the bottom line is that to the Western powers that be, Palestinians and the people of this region are basically seen as less than?
It's in their own words. As we heard from various statements, the words such as human animals, and some of them said that, no, we shouldn't use the term human animals because that's even an insult to animals themselves. So what is going on and what you and our guests have described is 100% deliberate. It's not accidental. And then when they lie about it, the lies are also deliberate. Their lies have been torn apart now. Even the one who concocted the lies of the mass rape story has had to essentially quietly admit that it was a totally uncredible story. But that gets buried and that doesn't get shown in the front pages. But people are losing their accounts on social media for telling these truths. People are called, like, I don't even know, what are they calling, rape deniers or all these other types of terms. The Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, said that if we don't expose the truth about these lies and that there's no evidence for their claims, that it all comes from these dubious IDF sources, we can see the dead Palestinian children every single day. If there was really one single dead or beheaded Palestinian child that wasn't generated by some AI image generator, as was in one case on social media, they would have no shame in plastering it around the world and making it poster that they would show on all the screens in Times Square, and they would shine on the, I don't know, all the famous buildings in Europe with high-powered projectors. They would shove it in our face, but they can't. They only have hearsay. But all these people are dying and being intentionally murdered and mowed down based on these lies, as an excuse to cover up their pre-planned, premeditated mass slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza.
Well, Eves, can you think of any part of the Western world that, if more than 30,000 civilians would have been killed, that nothing would have still been done by now to stop this murder?
No, I mean, there are lots of crimes in the imperial history. You look at what the U.S. did in Iraq in 2003. I mean, they hundreds of thousands, hundreds and hundreds of thousands were killed as a result. So
Western world, because I know, unfortunately, as was just talked about, in this part of the world, people seem to be disposable. But in the West, if something like this had happened, would they have allowed this to continue?
Well, we don't need to. I mean, we can just look at what they're doing with regards to Ukraine right now, where, you know, the UN says over 2 years, a bit over 10,000 Ukrainian civilians have been killed. Israel did that in, you know, probably the first 30 or 40 days of this onslaught on Gaza. You know, the Canadian government's reaction, U.S. government, is to pump in huge amounts of weapons, all kinds of sanctions on Russia, on and on and on. There is no doubt our political culture in Canada specifically, but North America, the NATO countries, treats Palestinians as to frame it as lesser is to use too light of language. I mean, the you look at a situation like the Israeli quote unquote hostages that are in Gaza. There's all this focus still put on this question, but this is completely irrelevant if you look at this issue from a big picture humanist perspective. I mean, there's thousands of Palestinian children who have lost limbs, and you don't even, that issue is just never even like mentioned in our media. But we'll hear endlessly about some Israeli soldiers that are still being held so that all the thousands and thousands of Palestinian prisoners, that they can maybe get the release of these thousands and thousands of Palestinians who've been kidnapped by Israel. It, all through our political culture. In this country, there's more focus on the feelings of some Jewish students at a university campus vis-a-vis a protest against the genocide than there is coverage of, you know, 30,000 Palestinians killed. Like, that's more important than some, like, feelings of somebody. So, you know, it all throughout the political culture, the racism is absolutely just, you know, oozing. And no, there's no doubt that if there was, you know, anything in the vicinity of what Israel's done happening to you know, white people, to happening to our self-described allies, this would be, you know, the outrage and the opposition would be immediate and would put a stop to it.
Right. Well, I mean, isn't it all quite ironic when it is the West which created the Zionist entity, the West supports Zionism, and the West also supported Nazism? These ideologies were created by them, but were used as an excuse to steal Palestinian land and to commit a continuous genocide against the Palestinians.
Absolutely. The supremacist mentality is something that basically dominates their thought. They just differ on who is the chosen people. Actually, I was listening to a very powerful speech from Sheikh Imran Hussein, and he was saying that this mental, spiritual, philosophical virus of this chosenism is what drives all the oppression that exists in the world today, that drives all the misery and bad things that we see in the world today. This idea that there is a group of inferior people, and that some group of people are superior, and they have a right to basically just do as they wish upon the so-called inferior peoples of the world, because either they're lesser humans in some cases, or sometimes they go even further and say that they're not humans at all, as is we're seeing here in the case of Palestine. So this is really a satanic ideology, because the first supremacist was Lucifer, Iblis himself, as the story in the Holy Quran demonstrates. So they can't claim that they're chosen of God when they're following such an evil satanic ideology. So they can only fool so many people for so long. But I think the world is actually waking up. And the fact that they're so masked off about it, if we can see all the people in Israeli Telegram chats cheering on when they see dead babies, when they see, like the other day, a man driven over by a bulldozer while he was still alive. They can't call themselves people of God when they're endorsing such wickedness and corruption on this earth.
Right. Well, Eves, the Israeli regime is not only dangerous for Palestinians, but to the whole region and world, as it has never had to abide by international law. Now, thus it bombs and assassinates at will. It is not only committing genocide in Gaza and murdering others in the West Bank, but it is invading the sovereignty of Lebanon and Syria and committing assassinations. Do you think that more countries are beginning to understand the dangers of this entity? And do you think that more countries will change their policies toward it?
Well, I think that what's happening in Latin America. Colombia announced yesterday or the day before that they were no more arms to Israel. You look at what Lula, the president of Brazil, said about the genocide. There's no doubt that that's it's growing sentiment. I saw Nicaragua brought Germany is bringing Germany to the International Court of Justice for their complicity in the genocide. So the rest of the world, aside from a handful of, you know, North American former European settler countries like Australia and some Western European countries, the vast majority of the world has been hostile to Zionism and Israel for a long time, and that's growing. I think that, you know, the people are just appalled by what they're seeing. Leaders, powerful people around the world, even appalled. I think also it's interesting to see the developments within the imperial core If you look at what happened in Michigan in the U.S. state in the primary, you know, you had this really big support for the uncommitted. And this was a really, you know, grassroots campaign to oppose Joe Biden's genocidal policy. If you look at the election of George Galloway in Britain in the by-election a couple days ago, the people, when they have a chance to, you know, weigh in on this question, there's a lot of dissent. Here in Montreal, it's unprecedented, the level of protests across Canada. We're tomorrow's going to be 22 weekends in a row of mass demonstrations against Canada's complicity in the genocide. So the opposition, even within those countries that are the ones that are heavily responsible for Israel's crimes, is growing. Now, you know, the U.S. empire is powerful. Right, so they have a way of protecting Israel diplomatically. They have a way of making it difficult for countries like Brazil or Colombia or Nicaragua to really, you know, for that spirit of opposition to really grow. But I think that around the world, people and governments are just appalled by what Israel's doing.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I mean, the majority of the population in Gaza is on the brink of starvation. The U.S. says it will start airdropping food. Why doesn't Washington just demand that the genocide end immediately? And why doesn't the U.S. demand the Zionist regime just let the aid trucks in?
This is just one big PR move to let off steam, because the international pressure and the international PR debacle that the Zionists have done has really been to their own detriment. But they're too arrogant, and they're too—I mean—they're psychopaths. Who would kill this many people and not have a few screws loose in their head? So this is just something to buy a little bit of PR for the Zionist regime. I personally think it's a little bit odd that the United States—they actually did the airdrop already of 66 packages. I think, you know, anybody who's aware of the satanic numerology, I think that's a little bit. Odd for the U.S. to do after they support the genocide. This is they're like basically stabbing the people in the back and then giving them a Band-Aid. It's incredibly hypocritical and sadistic, and it's as if they're mocking the Palestinians whom they've killed in the tens of thousands.
Well, Eves, I want you just to think about these statistics for a minute. Since October the 7th, more than 30,000 people have been killed, and even more because, of course, unfortunately, there's so many still under the rubble. At least 12,500 kids have been killed, averaging about 85, 90 kids a day being killed. Your thoughts on the type of regime that could do this to begin with?
Well, it's a regime that's obviously believes in a supremacist ideology. These are Jewish supremacists, which has been what Zionism has been about for a long time. But these are real Jewish supremacist fanatics that are in charge. And alongside that is a government, a state apparatus that operates with impunity. And it has been told over and over again for decades that it can basically do whatever it wants, and it will have the backing of the powerful forces. And, you know, just a really concrete example of that, you know, when the International Criminal Court began an investigation in 2020 into Israeli officials' war crimes, the Canadian government delivered a letter to the ICC saying, do not investigate Israeli war crimes, and threatened to cut off Canadian assistance to the ICC, which was a significant part of ICC budget. That's a really concrete message to the Israeli government to do whatever it wants to Palestinians. And, you know, there's many, many, many other examples of that. And so that's the nature of it. I agree, it's unequivocally a sadistic regime. I don't think, you know, there is a logic, I do think, to what they're doing here. I don't think they believe they're going to defeat Hamas or wipe Hamas out. I mean, I think there's some small element of wanting to do that, and obviously to, you know, kill Hamas fighters and resistance fighters. Israel wants to do that and has had a modest amount of success doing that. I don't think it believes it can actually just, you know, crush Hamas. But I do think it wants to drive, you know, everyone out of Gaza. That's if you care about a Jewish state, if your objective is a Jewish state, obviously the fact that there are more non-Jews in the region, that's a problem demographically for the Zionist entity. So if they could drive out hundreds of thousands, if not, you know, all of Palestinian population in Gaza, why wouldn't someone who you know is concerned about having a Jewish state and having a state based upon Jewish supremacy, why wouldn't they want to try to do that? And I think that's part of what they're trying to do. It's horrendous. It's you know, it's completely supremacist, but there is a logic to it from the perspective of this European colonial supremacist outpost that we call Israel.
Well, Ali, are you optimistic about the possibility of a ceasefire taking place before the month of Ramadan, as Egypt will host more talks?
If I remember correctly, in 2014, during that war or that slaughter, or that kind of, well, although it's a mini or mini, at the time I called it, and many other people were calling it a genocide, but it seems like a mini genocide compared to what it is today, unfortunately. The Zionists at that time had pledged to make, and it was during the time of Ramadan, I remember because it was my first time as doing Ramadan as a new Muslim. They pledged to make it the darkest Ramadan in history. So I don't think the Israelis will have any kind of humanity. I mean, they don't have any humanity anyways, but they certainly won't extend it, perhaps not even for a PR win during the holy month of Ramadan. And I don't trust the Egyptians or the Qataris enough to broker an honest ceasefire that would not let the blood of all these martyrs go to waste. So I think the ultimate guarantor of any ceasefire will be the arms of the resistance, because they are humiliating the Zionist regime. How many billions of dollars are they losing per day just in the Zionist entity alone due to the situation in northern occupied Palestine, thanks to Hezbollah, and also the areas surrounding Gaza, as well as Yemen and Iraq's strikes against the southern tip of Eilat, I believe is the name. And then just the global ramifications on the shipping routes, thanks to particularly to Yemen and Ansarullah. So I believe that the pressure from the resistance will secure a type of ceasefire whose terms are beneficial to the resistance. They may not get 100% of what they're asking for, but they will get enough where it humiliates the Zionist regime, it secures a victory for their people, and the death of all these martyrs will not go in vain.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with us here on the Spotlight. Yves Engler, author and political activist out of Montreal. Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Bastida Press out of Tehran. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye. We'll be right back.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEN.